Amen. Well, as you can see, the title of the class is The Reigns of Ahaz, Hezekiah, Manasseh. And I know many of you have been here for this series. This is, I think, the 14th week of the class. And we have, after this class today, we will have two more classes. 2 weeks from now, Perry will do a class on the final kings of Judah. And then the week after that, Alan will do a wrap-up class, just bring it to conclusion, what we have learned. Today, where we're at is, again, we're gonna reference Alan's meter of kings, the lineage of the kings. And as you can see, as you know, under David and Solomon, the Israelite kingdom was unified. And then because of Solomon's sin, God pronounced a judgment, and he divided the kingdom into two, the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. And where our class has taken us to is the period of time we talked about a couple weeks ago, the end of the northern kingdom. And now what we're going to do today is, last week Perry went back in time and covered some of the kings, Amaziah and Uzziah and Jotham. And we're going to pick up today with Ahaz, Hezekiah, and Manasseh. And as you can see, there's a meter that was generated based on the assessment of the inspired authors in terms of how they felt like these kings did in the eyes of the Lord. And you know, the chart here says bright green for good, and then kind of a bright red for evil. And so today you're going to go on what I would call a roller coaster ride. Because we got to really, you know, as you can see, Judah's had pretty good kings. There was a queen, Adaliah, who was a daughter of Ahab, who was an Israelite king who was red. And so she sort of got assigned a pretty wicked rule. But, you know, for the most part, the kings of Judah were pretty solid, did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. And now we're going to have, with Ahaz, kind of our first really just bright red king. And then we're going to have a roller coaster ride, and you'll see that as the class unfolds. Okay. If you have your Bibles, turn to 2 Kings 16. A lot of our text today is going to come out of 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles. And both those books have a lot of information about these three kings, and you'd almost have to read both accounts almost in total to get a really solid picture of all the aspects of their rule. And we're not going to be able to do that in this time, but I would like to commend you, you know, if you get a chance to read both accounts. I will give you references during it, but we're probably going to pick one or the other, but we will be back and forth a little bit. I'll try not to go all over the place between 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles. They're both documents that give the history of the kings of the Jews. We're going to start in verse 1. We're going to start with Ahaz. In the 17th year of Pekah, son of Remaliah, Ahaz, son of Jotham, king of Judah, began to reign. Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 16 years. Unlike David, his father, he did not do what was right in the eyes of the Lord his God. He followed the ways of the kings of Israel and even sacrificed his son in the fire, engaging in the detestable practices of the nations the Lord had driven out before the Israelites. He offered sacrifices and burned incense at the high places, on the hilltops, and under every spreading tree. Then Rezin, king of Aram, and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, marched up to fight against Jerusalem and besieged Ahaz, but they could not overpower him. At that time, Rezin, king of Aram, recovered Elath for Aram by driving out the people of Judah. Edomites then moved into Elath and have lived there to this day. So the account in 2 Chronicles 28, and again, I'll commend that to you to reading it on your own, goes into greater detail about this battle between Aram, Israel, as they allied and attacked Ahaz here in Judah. He's only 20 years old. He has this I think what happened was his dad probably died at the age of 41. I don't know that they were expecting him to. That may have been a sudden situation, and Ahaz is thrust upon him. And then, you know, Pekah had been reigning for about 17 years already in Israel, and he had an alliance with Aram, which is a neighbor to the north of Judah. They were kind of like right next to each other, and they had an alliance, and maybe they thought this was a good opportunity to maybe attack. But so the account in 2 Chronicles 28, he said, it goes into great detail. He lost 120,000 soldiers on one day. That's not even, you know, even our biggest wars in this century don't have those kind of losses in one day necessarily. Maybe Omaha Beach had a lot. That's 120,000 soldiers in one day. Says in Chronicles' account, because Judah had forsaken the Lord. He lost a brother, one of the king's sons. He lost the head of his palace guard and his second in command in the siege. It says also in that account, 200,000 wives, sons, and daughters were captured, and the Israelites were going to take them back to Israel as slaves. But they were only turned loose by the rebuke of a prophet of the Lord to the Israelites. So it's very difficult circumstances for a young king to be facing. So let's turn to Isaiah chapter 7. There's a fourth character we're going to consider today, and he's a prophet. Because all the, you know, these, and it's Isaiah, and we're going to turn to Isaiah chapter 7. And we're going to look at an interaction that this king had with Isaiah the prophet. Isaiah spent most of his career as a prophet in the court. He was actually, most people think that and assess that his father Amos was a brother of one of the kings of Judah. So he was probably like, Isaiah was in some ways part of the royal family. But God raised him up as a prophet. And in Isaiah chapter 7, we're going to pick up in verse 1 and read about, so just consider Ahaz has been attacked by these two, by this alliance right at the beginning of his reign. When Ahaz, son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, was king of Judah, King Rezin of Aram and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, marched up to fight against Jerusalem, but they could not overpower it. Now the house of David was told, Aram has allied itself with Ephraim, so the hearts of Ahaz and his people were shaken, as the trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. Then the Lord said to Isaiah, go out, you and your son Jehoshabub, to meet Ahaz at the end of the aqueduct of the upper pool on the road to the launderer's field. Say to him, be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid. Do not lose heart because of these two smoldering stubs of firewood, because of the fierce anger of Rezin and Aram and of the son of Remaliah. Aram, Ephraim, and Remaliah's son have plotted your ruin, saying, let us invade Judah, let us tear it apart and divide it among ourselves, and make the son of Tabeel king over it. Yet this is what the sovereign Lord says, it will not take place, it will not happen. For the head of Aram is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is only Rezin. Within 65 years, Ephraim will be too shattered to be a people. The head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is only Remaliah's son. If you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. Again, the Lord spoke to Ahaz. Ask the Lord your God for a sign, whether in the deepest depths or in the highest heights. But Ahaz said, I will not ask. I will not put the Lord to the test. Then Isaiah said, hear now, you house of David. Is it not enough to try the patience of humans? Will you try the patience of my God also? Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. He will be eating curds and honey when he knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right. For before the boy knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right, the land of the two kings you dread will be laid waste. The Lord will bring on you and on your people and on the house of your father a time unlike any since Ephraim broke away from Judah. He will bring the king of Assyria. And so This is what I would call Ahaz's defining moment. He's only 20 years old. He's very young. And Isaiah has been a prophet, probably was, you know, part of the royal family, had a relationship, probably come in and out. And so Isaiah approaches them with God's message, which is, stand firm. So he's just had this battle. He had the siege. They weren't able, he was able to, even though he had great losses and great casualties, and he had this huge setback, it was sort of like, but they did not get conquered. And so it's obvious that Pekah, who was the king of Israel, and Aram had somebody named Tabeel, apparently. They wanted to make the puppet ruler of Judah so they can control it. And they played this gambit and attacked. So Ahaz had a choice. What was the advice of Isaiah? He said, be calm. Don't be afraid. Be careful. And God made a promise. He said, don't worry about these guys. They'll be gone. So he said, ask the Lord for a sign. He's giving Ahaz an opportunity to demonstrate some faith, and Ahaz does not do it. There's different analysis of what that meant when he said, I will not, he kind of looks noble. I will not put the Lord to the test. It could have been sarcastic. It's kind of hard to tell. It could have been, I don't believe this. I'm not going to do it. You know, I'm kind of reacting to you sarcastically. I'm not going to put the Lord to the test. It could have been that he didn't want to put the Lord to the test because he did not want to see God at work. But probably the reason is he had a plan B. If you were here Wednesday night, Steve talked about it's not good to have a plan B. Well, Ahaz already had in his mind a plan B. And his plan B would define the rest of his 16-year reign, which is, I am not going to take the advice of Isaiah the prophet and the Lord and have faith. I'm going to rely on myself. And he relied on himself the rest of the way. And so his idea was to come up, and let's read it here, because I think we're going to. So there's his choice. He made the choice. And as a choice, his choice was to turn to the Assyrian culture. There was as you studied over the last couple of weeks, we've seen that there's a nation rising up. Started with Jonah went to it. He had an abhorrence of it, but there was a great dread in northern Israel of the Assyrian kingdom because they were the first country right next to Assyria's north of Aram. And so like Israel and Aram were kind of like between Judah and Assyria. And Assyria was this rising power in the area. And he looked to Assyria and came up with an alliance. God said, you don't need an alliance with Assyria, but he underwent an alliance with Assyria. We're going to go to 2 Chronicles 28 now. And we're going to read starting in verse 16. In 2 Chronicles 28. At that time, King Ahaz sent to the kings of Assyria for help. The Edomites had again come and attacked Judah and carried away prisoners, while the Philistines had raided towns in the foothills and the Negev of Judah. I mean, Ahaz is being attacked everywhere. They captured and occupied Beth Shemesh, Ajalon, and Gederoth, as well as Soko, Timnah, and Gimzo, with their surrounding villages. The Lord had humbled Judah because of Ahaz, king of Israel, for he had promoted wickedness in Judah and had been most unfaithful to the Lord. Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came to him, but he gave him trouble instead of help. Ahaz took some of the things from the temple of the Lord and from the royal palace and from the officials and presented them to the king of Assyria, but that did not help him. In his time of trouble, King Ahaz became even more unfaithful to the Lord. He offered sacrifices to the gods of Damascus, who had defeated him, for he thought, since the gods of the kings of Aram have helped them, I will sacrifice to them, so they will help me. But they were his downfall, and the downfall of all Israel. Ahaz gathered together the furnishings from the temple of God and cut them in pieces. He shut the doors of the Lord's temple and set up altars at every street corner in Jerusalem. In every town in Judah, he built high places to burn sacrifices to other gods and arouse the anger of the Lord, the God of his ancestors. The other events of his reign and all his ways from beginning to end are written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. Ahaz rested with his ancestors and was buried in the city of Jerusalem, but he was not placed in the tombs of the kings of Israel. And Hezekiah, his son, succeeded him as king. So basically, Ahaz's response to, you know, God working on him to rely on him was to he doubled down on his faulty reasoning. He doubled down on relying on himself and relying on things and, you know, nations and cultures outside of God. What I mean by Assyrian culture is basically he turned the temple into an Assyrian altar. You read about that in 2 Kings 16. It goes into great detail about how he customized the altar to make it look like the Assyrians in deference to the king of Assyria. He basically was compromising and placating the Assyrian alliance he had. Okay, so Ahaz gets assigned a very evil term, 16 years. His son Hezekiah becomes king. And now after experiencing some low lows, we're going to experience some high highs. 2 Chronicles 29, verse 1. Hezekiah was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 29 years. His mother's name was Abijah, daughter of Zechariah. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, just as his father David had done. In the first month of the first year of his reign, he opened the doors of the temple of the Lord and repaired them. He brought in the priests and the Levites, assembled them in the square on the east side, and said, "Listen to me, Levites. Consecrate yourselves now and consecrate the temple of the Lord, the God of your ancestors. Remove all defilements from the sanctuary. Our parents were unfaithful. They did evil in the eyes of the Lord our God and forsook him. They turned their faces away from the Lord's dwelling place and turned their backs on him. They also shut the doors of the portico and put out the lamps. They did not burn incense or present any burnt offerings at the sanctuary to the God of Israel. Therefore, the anger of the Lord had fallen on Judah and Jerusalem. He has made them an object of dread and horror and scorn, as you can see with your own eyes. This is why our fathers have fallen by the sword, and why our sons and daughters and our wives are in captivity. Now I intend to make a covenant with the Lord, the God of Israel, so that his fierce anger will turn away from us. My sons, do not be negligent now, for the Lord has chosen you to stand before him and serve him, to minister before him and to burn incense." That's a very bold response by a young king. Again, another young king. And he's making a bold response. He says, we're changing. He's announcing it. And he's reforming and straightening out the temple. And he did it quickly. Let's turn over to, skip down. It says, let's see. We're going to go to verse 36. So the service, and it talks about, they go into great detail the rest of the chapter about what they did to straighten the temple out. Obviously, Ahaz had turned it into an Assyrian outpost culturally, and they removed that culture and restored it back. Verse 36, so the service of the temple of the Lord was reestablished. Hezekiah and all the people rejoiced at what God had brought about for his people because it was done so quickly. It doesn't take long to restore something. Just, you got to go do it. Okay, chapter 30, verse 1. Hezekiah sent word to all Israel and Judah, and also letters to Ephraim and Manasseh, inviting them to come to the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem and celebrate the Passover to the Lord, the God of Israel. The king and his officials and the whole assembly in Jerusalem decided to celebrate the Passover in the second month. They had not been able to celebrate it at the regular time because not enough priests had consecrated themselves and the people had not assembled in Jerusalem. The plan seemed right both to the king and to the whole assembly. They decided to send a proclamation throughout Israel from Beersheba to Dan, calling the people to come to Jerusalem and celebrate the Passover to the Lord, the God of Israel. It had not been celebrated in large numbers, according to what was written. So here, Hezekiah is introducing the Passover, and it's kind of interesting that we're today having this class because this is, as I said earlier, this is the Passover weekend upon which the time during which Jesus was judged and became our Passover lamb, and then today was resurrected, Sunday after Passover. And so here we are, and Hezekiah is setting up. Again, he's continuing to restore and reform. He's actually inviting the tribes. By now, and I got to mention this, where we're at now is Israel has now gone into captivity. Hosea was the last king. Pekah lasted, you know, we had that the prophecy of Isaiah we read about, he lasted 3 more years after Isaiah had made that prophecy and asked Ahaz for a sign. 9 more years was Hosea. So during Ahaz's reign, Israel ceased to exist as a sovereign kingdom. And of course, Aram was destroyed by the Assyrian alliance that Ahaz had. So now here's Hezekiah, and he's reaching back out to these people that are scattered in this now northern area of Israel, saying, come celebrate with us. So again, he's restoring things. Let's pick up in verse 15. They slaughtered, of chapter 30 of 2 Chronicles, they slaughtered a Passover lamb on the 14th day of the second month. The priests and the Levites were ashamed and consecrated themselves and brought burnt offerings to the temple of the Lord. Then they took up their regular positions as prescribed in the law of Moses, the man of God. The priests splashed against the altar the blood handed to them by the Levites. Since many in the crowd had not consecrated themselves, the Levites had to kill the Passover lambs for all those who were not ceremonially clean and could not consecrate their lambs to the Lord. Although most of the many people who came from Ephraim, Manasseh, Issachar, and Zebulun had not purified themselves, yet they ate the Passover contrary to what was written. But Hezekiah prayed for them, saying, may the Lord, who is good, pardon everyone who sets their heart on seeking God. The Lord, the God of their ancestors, even if they are not clean according to the rules of the sanctuary. And the Lord heard Hezekiah and healed the people. What great leadership. Hezekiah, you know, instituting and restoring, but showing, you know, but pleading, you know, for the people here. And you can see God's grace. They didn't do it exactly, but God's looking at the heart, you know, and seeing the response. I think it's a great passage. Let's pick up in verse 26. There was great joy in Jerusalem, for since the days of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, there had been nothing like this in Jerusalem. The priests and the Levites stood to bless the people, and God heard them before their prayer reached heaven, his holy dwelling place. And of course, as you can imagine, now there's a showdown with Assyria. This ally of Ahaz, Hezekiah, has now totally opposed. And now there's a showdown. Famous showdown where we're going to pick up in chapter 32. Verse 1. After that, all that Hezekiah had so faithfully done, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came and invaded Judah. So now they've consumed Aram. They've consumed Israel. Now they're working their way south and they're coming for Judah. He laid siege to the fortified cities, thinking to conquer them for himself. When Hezekiah saw that Sennacherib had come and that he intended to wage war against Jerusalem, he consulted with his officials and military staff about blocking off the water from the springs outside the city, and they helped him. They gathered a large group of people who blocked all the springs of the stream that flowed through the land. Why should the kings of Assyria come and find plenty of water, they said. Then he worked hard repairing all the broken sections of the wall and building towers on it. He built another wall outside that one and reinforced the terraces of the city of David. He also made a large number of weapons and shields. He appointed military officers over the people and assembled them before him in the square at the city gate and encouraged them with these words. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged because of the king of Assyria and the vast army with him, for there is a greater power with us than with him. With him is only the arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles. And the people gained confidence from what Hezekiah, the king of Judah, said. I mean, what great faith. I mean, as unfaithful as his father was, he was a mere image in faith. I mean, what inspiration, what a high point for this king. And then in verse 20, King Hezekiah and the prophet Isaiah, son of Amos. Well, what happens is Sennacherib throws down some trash talk, threatens them. They're, you know, surrounding the gates of Jerusalem. And so here's what Hezekiah does. Verse 20, him and the prophet Isaiah, son of Amos, cried out in prayer to heaven about this. And the Lord sent an angel who annihilated all the fighting men and the commanders and officers in the camp of the Assyrian king. So he withdrew to his own land in disgrace. And when he went to the temple of his God, some of his sons, his own flesh and blood, cut him down with the sword. So the Lord saved Hezekiah and the people of Jerusalem from the hand of Sennacherib, king of Assyria, and from the hand of all others. He took care of them on every side. Many brought offerings to Jerusalem for the Lord and valuable gifts for Hezekiah, king of Judah. From then on, he was highly regarded by all the nations. And word gets out. Word got out. In fact, this happened. There's an angel of the Lord, and he came. He slew 180,000 Assyrian troops. And the testimony of that is the reaction of the people around them, because he became a celebrity. We're going to skip to some of this story about Hezekiah having some struggles with pride. He had an envoy from Babylon, this nation called Babylon, which is rising as Assyria now will start to fall. Babylon will rise, and he had some envoys come from Babylon because they heard about this. They said, how in the world did this king with this little army destroy 180,000 Assyrian troops in a siege? We got to go find out. It's a great opportunity for sharing about the Lord. But Hezekiah showed, basically in contradiction to what Isaiah advised him to do, he showed them and he celebrated himself rather than the Lord. And he was rebuked for that. But for the most part, Hezekiah had a great reign. He had a great faith. Some of the highest degrees of faith, some of the most inspirational words that we've heard. Let's move on, because Hezekiah had a son, Manasseh, who was 12 years old when he became king. We could talk about the 15 more years and the significance of that, but we're not going to cover that here at this time, but I'd be glad to talk to you about off the record if you want. It's kind of interesting, I think. But we're going to start in Genesis 15:13, and we're not going to go there, but it's a story of Abraham from way back, and God made a promise that you would inherit the land of the Amorites, and God said, but not now, because the sin of the Amorites has not reached its full measure. And so there's sort of this concept that God has with nations is he'll give you a full measure before he kind of says, that's enough. And in this case, he was fair to the Amorites. He did not, just have Abraham and his people go right in. There was the whole Exodus history and the Passover and God used that to build this culture of Israel. But there's this idea of its full measure, and we're going to see that with Manasseh. Let's pick up in 2 Kings 21. We're going to go back to 2 Kings, and we're going to talk about his reign as we wrap this up. For those that have been in the class, if you remember class on Ahab, Manasseh was the Ahab of Judah, for lack of a better term. Verse 1, Manasseh was 12 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 55 years. His mother's name was Hephzibah. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, following the detestable practices of the nations the Lord had driven out before the Israelites. He rebuilt the high places his father Hezekiah had destroyed, and he also erected altars to Baal and made an Asherah pole, as Ahab, king of Israel, had done. He bowed down to all the starry hosts and worshiped them. He built altars in the temple of the Lord, of which the Lord had said, in Jerusalem I will put my name. In the two courts of the temple of the Lord, he built altars to all the starry hosts. He sacrificed his own son in the fire. He practiced divination. He sought omens and consulted mediums and spiritists. He did much evil in the eyes of the Lord, arousing his anger. He took the carved Asherah pole he had made and put it in the temple, of which the Lord had said to David and to his son Solomon, in this temple and in Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, I will put my name forever. I will not again make the feet of the Israelites wander from the land I gave their ancestors. If only they will be careful to do everything I commanded and keep the whole law that my servant Moses gave them. But the people did not listen. Manasseh led them astray, so that they did more evil than the nations the Lord had destroyed before the Israelites. They were doing things worse than the Amorites in God's eyes. So let's pick up in verse 9. Well, verse 10, the Lord said through his servants, the prophets. So there's some pushback on this. This is going on. And so some of the Lord's servants push back. Manasseh, king of Judah, has committed these detestable sins. He has done more evil than the Amorites who preceded him and has led Judah into sin with his idols. Therefore, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I am going to bring such disaster on Jerusalem and Judah that the ears of everyone who hears of it will tingle. I will stretch out over Jerusalem the measuring line used against Samaria and the plumb line used against the house of Ahab. I will wipe out Jerusalem as one wipes a dish, wiping it and turning it upside down. I will forsake the remnant of my inheritance and give them into the hands of enemies. They will be looted and plundered by all their enemies. They have done evil in my eyes and have roused my anger from the day their ancestors came out of Egypt until this day. Moreover, Manasseh also shed so much innocent blood that he filled Jerusalem from end to end. Besides the sin that he had caused Judah to commit so that they did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So this is, you know, commonly, you know, this was Isaiah. Again, you know, this is the third, this is again Isaiah the prophet and some other prophets. We're pushing back. And now, what we're reacting with is we're not necessarily ignoring, we're not necessarily talking trash, but we're getting violent. Isaiah, most Jewish historians assign Isaiah to martyrdom by being sawed in two. You read that in the book of Hebrews chapter 12, it talks about those who are sawed in two. It does not mention Isaiah explicitly, but it led, most Jewish historians agree that it was under Manasseh that Isaiah was martyred. Sawed in two. Not just, you know, violent, but brutal violent. You know, a reign of terror, suppressing opposition. Manasseh, and apparently this was God's saying, the full measure has been reached. Let's turn to, we're gonna look at a passage in Jeremiah 15. Then the Lord said to me, this is, and Jeremiah prophesied about another 40, 50 years after Manasseh's reign was over, looking back. Now this is looking back. Then the Lord said to me, even if Moses and Samuel were to stand before me, my heart would not go out to the people. Send them away from my presence, let them go. And if they ask you, where shall we go? Tell them. This is what the Lord says. Those destined for death to death, those for the sword to the sword, those for starvation to starvation, those for captivity to captivity. I will send four kinds of destroyers against them, the sword to kill and the dogs to drag away and the birds and the wild animals to devour and destroy. I will make them abhorrent to all the kingdoms of the earth because of what Manasseh, son of Hezekiah, king of Judah, did in Jerusalem. It was just too much. So there's also, again, read the account in 2 Chronicles 33 about Manasseh's repentance. He did have, he got, God put him into exile, put a hook in his nose. So basically, he went into exile and had an incredible amount of remorse and came back to Jerusalem and instituted many reforms. But with God, the full measure had been reached. And that's a sobering biblical concept. It's a sobering relationship concept that we have with God. In this case, God is telling the nation of Judah, I've reached my full measure. And it begs the question, I think it's worth asking. Do leaders define a nation or influence a nation, or does a nation influence a leader? I think there's truth to both. It really reflected, I think Manasseh's reign really reflected in many ways the bankruptcy of the people in general. More so than just saying Manasseh's a bad guy and everyone else these innocent victims. No, this was a joint effort. So we have to put that in context. Even when Manasseh came back and showed incredible remorse, it says the people were still struggling with having a soft heart. That's where we're going to pick up. Again, one thing I want to show is is talk about Isaiah just for a moment. He was a barometer to each king. Ahaz kept him at arm's length. There's really not necessarily any violence associated with Ahaz's reign. It was just more of a, I'm going to indoctrinate myself in Assyrian culture. I'm going to pollute my people with it. And it did a lot of damage. Hezekiah demonstrated a very productive relationship with the Lord's prophets. And Manasseh, his relationship, which really was the full measure, was he reacted with violence to God's prophets. Probably nothing makes God more angry than for people to react with violence to prophets of God. So, at this point in our lesson, we're gonna call it to a close, and we're gonna parry with his death sentence proclaimed. I guess you could call it on Judah now. Perry is going to come back 2 weeks and look at the last kings, and we'll see how this judgment was carried out, in spite of some of the efforts of a couple of kings to really try to reform. So, with that, thank you for your attention. We're going to be dismissed, and we're going to get ready for continue our worship service. And you can go get your children now. Thank you.